Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. By now you've seen the yard signs popping up for issue two. Frankly, I thought I'd seen some against issue two, but my guests today have assured me that's not the case. It's sort of like a stealth issue that until September was under the radar for most Ohioans. Lots of folks are saying that they're unsure what it's all about. Will issue two protect Ohio farm animals or set up a roadblock to those who would? Is it necessary to amend the state constitution to accomplish what issue two intends? Joining us today to help clarify these issues is Michael Bumgarner, the newly appointed vice president of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation's new Center for Food and Animal Issues. The Ohio Farm Bureau is backing issue two. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Ann.
I can't wait to hear about that new Center for Food and Animal Issues.
I'd love to tell you about
it. And Joe Logan, he's the director of agricultural programs for the Ohio Environmental Council, which opposes issue two. Joe, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ann. I guess I wanted to point out that I'm speaking this morning on behalf of the Ohio Environmental Stewardship Alliance, a network of 21 statewide and community-based groups that has voted to oppose issue two.
The Ohio Environmental Stewardship Alliance. I'm sorry about that. Issue two, if approved by Ohio voters, would establish the Livestock Care Standards Board. It's a 13-member panel, and the proponents easily acknowledge that the proposed constitutional amendment on the ballot on November 3rd, it's as an end run against other groups that are also interested in animal welfare. The board would be bipartisan but entirely appointed by politicians, and that's all I'm going to tell you right now. We can get started with Michael Bumgarner. First, who does the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation represent in this?
The Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is an organization that represents farmers across the state. We have 230,000 members, of which about or over 60,000 of them are actual producers. We are a grassroots organization. We have county organizations that are very involved at the local level and then all the way up through, obviously, to the state organization that's housed downtown here in Columbus.
When you say 60,000 actual producers, what's the difference between that and the 230,000?
Well, you can be a member of Ohio Farm Bureau and not actually be in production agriculture.
Okay. You're a farmer.
I have a farm background. I live on a farm. I don't go
don't
out and farm every day. Correct.
Okay. And Joe, tell me about the alliance that you represent.
Sure. The alliance is a statewide network of 21 groups, both statewide groups and community-based groups, groups such as the Ohio Farmers Union, which characteristically represents smaller farms, the OFA organization, which represents organic producers and consumers, chapters of League of Women Voters, Sierra Club, and the Ohio Environmental Council, a number of environmental organizations.
And this alliance was formed because of issue two?
It was formed because of a host of environmental issues of concern in various communities around Ohio, and this has been one of the issues that they have decided to adopt.
Okay, but you are a director of agricultural programs for the Ohio Environmental Council.
Correct.
And you're a farmer?
Yes.
What do you do?
In coalition with my brother up in northeastern Ohio, who's probably working on the combine right now, we grow some row crops and graze cattle in northeastern Ohio.
Okay. Michael, why is it necessary to create a board like this?
Well, the creation of this board defines a process to deal with issues that predominantly or have come to the forefront in recent years from an animal handling or well-being or welfare standpoint. As we've looked to see what's occurred in other states over the last few years, you're seeing production practices that have been accepted production practices for many years, science-based production practices being challenged. What we've seen occur during this time is groups have come and opposed those based on what they feel is not living up or not providing good welfare standards within these production units. They're playing off people's emotions. They're taking specific situations and trying to paint that as a broad-based example of what occurs across the entire industry, which isn't accurate. What we're trying to do through the creation of this Care Standards Board is define a process to assure, our consumers that these issues are being addressed. We're looking at all aspects of the issue and providing assurance to our consumer that, you know, we're doing the appropriate things at the farm level.
Is there any other state that has created a panel like this? In response to the same threats that you perceive?
No, there's not.
Okay, so Ohio would be a groundbreaker.
We are a groundbreaker. We are a leader. We hope this becomes a model for other states to adopt and to implement in the coming years. We do have a lot of states watching what's going on here in the state and with this election coming up because, as I said, this is a model that we want and hope that other states adopt.
In other states where organizations have had gotten laws enacted and on ballot issues. I think in California it was a ballot issue to address animal welfare. What have you learned from those that worries you? What specifically has gone wrong in those states that is a concern?
Well, I think you need to understand the states that have been pulled out as examples in what some of these organizations have done, have gone to states where there's very little production agriculture, Florida, Arizona. You know, when you're talking about the production practices that are targeting, we had one hog producer in Florida.
You're talking animal production.
Animal production.
Okay.
In Arizona, I think there may have been three hog producers affected by what occurred in Arizona. As they moved into California, obviously a state that had more significant agriculture, but they also had a more of a liberal population in how they view things. And when you put a picture of an animal being abused on the screen, people will side with, you know, the care for that animal, and rightfully so. As producers, you know, that's not the norm. That is not what we do on the farm. So what we've tried to do is, you know, again, define a process because, you know, when you peel back the layers and understand, you know, the people that are bringing these initiatives to the table in these other states, their ultimate goal is not just strictly elimination of certain production practices, but their ultimate goal is elimination of food animal production as we know it today.
Okay. Joe Logan, director of, with the Ohio Environmental Stewardship Alliance.
Okay.
Why is it not a good idea to establish this board?
Sure. Now, when the agribusiness folks first came to chat with us about this idea, we thought, Livestock Care Board doesn't sound like a bad idea. Let's go ahead and incorporate this as part of a legislative procedure to make sure that we move forward consistent with the views of consumers so that we're making sure that agriculture in Ohio is producing the sort of things that consumers approve of and will accept. And they said, no, because of our concern about outside organizations coming in, we're going to do this via the Constitution. So that's our first issue there, that we certainly, even if this were the ideal solution to a compelling and urgent problem, we still think that it should have been done via legislative means rather than through the Constitution.
Now, I've heard that they tried, that it was tried, that they went to the legislature was unwilling to address it at that level, and that since they couldn't get it through the legislature, then they go to the constitutional level, and the legislature obviously approved that pretty overwhelmingly, not to suggest that all the individual legislators support it. It's just they supported putting it on the ballot.
Yeah, that's a great narrative. I'm not sure it meets with the facts, actually.
Okay.
We had met with a number of legislators, the chairman of the Ag Committee, and we had our follow-up meeting with a couple of leaders in the Agricultural Committee with the intention of trying to begin this dialogue with everybody at the table, consumers, agribusiness folks, to decide if the standards need to be changed in Ohio, and if so, how to set up a schedule whereby agriculture could accommodate to that. As soon as our second meeting happened, boom, this constitutional amendment got introduced, and it was, I think it was introduced on a Thursday. The following Wednesday, they had committee hearings in both the House and the Senate, only a half an hour apart. And by the end of that day, they had not only sponsor testimony completed, they had proponent testimony completed, opponent testimony completed, and votes. It was voted out of both houses in a day. That's a testament to the tremendous force and influence that was behind this issue. And it went through essentially the hearing committee hearing process like a blitzkrieg.
Do you think that that's an appropriate way to address a proposed constitutional amendment, Michael?
Well, I think what you need to understand, this issue didn't come about this year. This issue has been building over a number of years, in fact, decades. As you go back and look at some of the activities of some of these organizations that have come in to threaten food animal production. As far as the process that occurred downtown with the General Assembly, I think one thing everybody needs to understand, it passed both House and the Senate overwhelmingly. I think there was one vote opposing this in the Senate. I think it was a 32-1, 33-1, whatever vote there. It was 84-5 to 12-13.
Some people might say that's just because the legislature's too chicken to deal with it themselves. No
well,
pun intended.
I understand your
They've done
your
it before.
Concern. You know, but what they realize is the importance of this issue to every citizen of the state. You know, when you're talking about something that will affect not only the producers of the state but the consumers in this state, they realize the importance of this, and the urgency was to get something out in front of people for they could react to. By bringing this to a constitutional amendment and having a vote here next week, this allows every citizen in the state to stand up and speak out on this issue and show whether it's important to them or not.
You know, when people with issues on the ballot, if people don't understand it very well, they tend to vote no. And that's just, you know, not necessarily happened this time. It just tends to be that way. And without much debate on it, I called it the stealth issue, and it has been for me. It just kind of popped up on my own radar, like, oh, by the way, what's issue two? Well, somewhat in August or something. Are you concerned that people don't know enough about the issue and that they may not then either vote on it at all or vote against it because it hasn't had that kind of legislative
right.
debate?
Well, we hope we're getting the word out and educating people. We are doing, I guess, all we think we can at this point. We're pushing right up to the last minute, trying to make sure people are aware of what issue two is and the importance of it to every citizen in the state. From an educational standpoint, can you always do more? That's a given. There's going to be somebody out there that doesn't understand, you know, what issue two is about. We hope they read the ballot language when they go to vote, because when you read the ballot language, this is about establishing standards to operate under for the welfare of the animals we produce.
I want to get into that ballot language. And, Joe, I want to give you a chance to respond. But first, we need to take a short break. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU NPR News. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Talking with us today, Michael Bumgarner, the newly appointed vice president of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation's new Center for Food and Animal Issues, and I still want to get to that. And also Joe Logan, he's with the Ohio Environmental Stewardship Alliance. You guess which is for or against. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Integrate, helping to improve business performance through brand design and marketing communications for more than 20 years. On the web at integrateinc.com or at 614-421-0004.
And good morning, I'm Amy Jarovich. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher, 45 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:19. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. It's your choice with the WOSU FYI e-newsletter. Go to wosu.org/email to sign up today. And looking at the weather forecast, sunshine this morning, a few clouds this afternoon, and a high of 65. Rain showers are likely tonight, a low of 48 degrees. Mostly cloudy Wednesday morning with morning rain showers. And then cloudy skies and a high of 60 for Wednesday. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about Issue 2. It is the ballot issue that would amend the Ohio Constitution. It would create a board of a 13-member board appointed by legislators and the governor. It'd be bipartisan. And that board would decide animal care standards in the state of Ohio as it pertains to agriculture. Joining us today, Michael Bumgarner. He is the vice president of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation's new Center for Food and Animal Issues. Ohio Farm Bureau is backing issue two. And also Joe Logan. He is with the Ohio Environmental Stewardship Alliance, which opposes issue two. Joe is also Director of Agricultural Programs for the Ohio Environmental Council. Thanks again to both of you for being here. Joe, you wanted to talk a little bit about the ballot language that Michael was speaking about earlier before the break.
Yes, Ann, I think you rightly indicated that many voters, if they're uncertain about an issue when they go into the voting booth, will instinctively vote no. I think to the credit of the yes on two folks, they have done a brilliant job of configuring the ballot language in this, so it sounds very benign, very friendly.
So when you say brilliant, you mean?
Strategic.
Machiavellian brilliant. Okay.
Your word, but nevertheless, okay. It is loaded up with language that says we are going to care for farm animals. And Mike and I both have a background in agriculture, and I think we both agree that most farmers in Ohio treat their animals very, very well. So that raises the question of whether this is actually needed or not. And if it is not needed, why are we changing our Constitution? If it is needed, why didn't we approach this in a different way? But not only is the ballot language pretty friendly, but it's also loaded up with terms like local foods, safe foods, which may or may not be germane to what it's actually going to happen when this occurs. And because it sounds too good, so good, and there is so much money behind this, the national agribusiness interests from outside Ohio have contributed over $1 million to this initiative. And so that adds questions about whether this is really an Ohio issue or not. And at the bottom line, your mother told you, if something looks too good to be true, maybe it is. And I think that adage applies.
Michael, what was the process to decide the makeup of the board? And could you give us a little brief overview of what it would be?
Well, your makeup of the board is really a cross-section of society. When you look at the makeup, you have veterinarians, you have family farms, you have representatives from a local humane society, your College of Agriculture within the state, and so on. Consumers are on the board. So it is a cross-section of society in Ohio today that so we can take a look at the issues and have all representation sitting at the table to determine what's appropriate.
You know, one element in it is the inclusion of a representative of a family farm. But I'm not sure. There's no definition for family farm. And families can own big, gigantic industrial-type farms, too, can't they?
Most certainly.
So family farm isn't, you know, Mr. Green Jeans down, you know, with a couple cows and a horse and a nice organic garden somewhere,
yeah,
necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a question in there. And
well, it's a question because there is no definition of that, and I think it's one of those warm and fuzzy references that I'm not quite sure I understand.
You're exactly right. And you're having people on both sides of the fence wanting clarification on that, because if you are a large farmer, you want to make sure that, you know, Mr. Green Jeans, as you said, is not dictating.
I can't help it. That just dates me. That's all.
Is not dictating to them how they should be producing. And if you're a small farmer, you don't want the large farmer telling
right.
them how to produce. This is, you know, in addition to the things that Joe said as far as providing, you know, food safety, locally grown food, food security, this is also about choices. You know, what we hope occurs in the intent of the board is to maintain all opportunities, large or small, for producers to be in production agriculture. We need all sizes of producers. We have a lot of niche markets out there today that have tremendous opportunities for our small, you know, whether it's organic, all natural, whatever it is, there's tremendous opportunities out there because there's a segment of society wishes to eat that type of product. But we also have a demand out there for volumes of food that we have to meet. And there's estimates out there over the next 40 years, food production will have to go up 70% to meet that growing demand. So if you're not incorporating new technologies into how we're producing food, we will never be able to meet that demand that is coming at us.
Joe, what do you feel? I mean, when you talk about the makeup of the board, your comments are sort of cryptic. What would you rather see? If this was going to be a legislative process, what would you rather?
We don't have any concerns about the mix of expertise that's involved in this board. It seems very wise. However, that said, what I think is important about this board is that it is a board exclusively of political appointees. And we think that
bipartisan, though.
Bipartisan,
okay.
But I think we all understand that both sides on this issue are subject to immense political forces. And, you know, the rapidity, the speed at which this went through the legislature, I think is a good indicator of the immense political power that is behind this initiative. And I think it's unrealistic to expect that a same mere image of that political power would not be manifested in the selection and appointment of these individuals.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. If you would like to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. Don't know why I'm giving out the number because there's already a whole bunch of you on the line. For when I pick up your calls, let me know, are you for or against issue two, or do you not know yet how you feel about it? Because I want to be fair. I want to be going back and forth. I want to keep this very balanced in terms of caller participation. That said, I really appreciate the calls. Nancy, you're on the air. Are you for or against issue two?
I'm against issue two.
Okay. Tell us why.
For many of the reasons that you've already mentioned, that there's a political appointees and that a family farmer hasn't been defined. But also I think that my concern is we're not really talking about the production issues that we say, oh, well, we've always done production this way, that in order to be profitable we need to keep doing this way. But I'm saying, well, that's what we said about cotton in the South. That's we need to be asking ourselves, why do we need to have so many antibiotics that not only affect the animals but affect all of our groundwater,
okay,
our soil?
But you don't think that this board could address those kinds of issues and be fair about it? It looks like, you know, they say that they're concerned about the same sorts of things.
I don't believe they are. No, the board, well, I agree with the speakers have already said the constitutional amendment is not the way to do this. And no, at this point, the board sounds like it's going to be weighted towards doing practices to keep the practices the way they are.
Okay. Any people for issue two? Thank you very much, Nancy. Appreciate your call.
You're welcome.
Bill, it says you are for issue two.
Yes, I am.
Okay, tell us why.
Well, a little bit of background. Number one, I'm an OFA member.
Which is the Ohio
Ecological Food and Farm Association.
Thank you.
Which is opposed to it. I'm also a Farm Bureau member.
Okay.
Which obviously is for it. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of information out regarding this being big business or big agriculture. And I guess I'd like to pose this to Joe Logan. I don't feel that that's necessarily the case. And Joe just told why the reasons if the board members were put in place, why it's bad that they're appointed by the governor, president of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House. The alternative in a statewide election or a statewide board is to have those people voted on by the public,
like we do for the school board and the the Ohio Supreme Court, for that matter.
Yeah. And I think it would be viewed as such a big negative if instead it would have been an elected board, because, again, those people were saying this is just big agriculture. Who would be the one best able to go ahead and fund candidates? So, Joe, you know, which way do you want it? Do you want it to be a case where a governor who's responsible to the voters, or do you want to go ahead and have it an elected position where then the criticism would be that big agriculture is buying the vote?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Do you want me to respond?
Yes, please,
yeah,
Joe.
Absolutely. That actually gets to the crux of this matter. We think that there is a third way, and that is to bring all the parties together, to bring agribusiness, to bring consumers together, and to bring the political leadership in the state of Ohio together, decide if our animal care practices need to change in Ohio. If they do, set about a course so that agriculture can transition to those new standards. And sooner or later, the agricultural producers in Ohio have to come to grips with an acknowledgement and acceptance of what consumer desires are and realign their production practices to create the sorts of products that consumers want.
Michael, when you talk about...
Can I make a comment on that?
Of course.
You know, I'd like to sit around a campfire and sing Kumbaya too, but that's not the reality of the world we live in today. you know, as far as bringing everybody together and feel you're going to resolve these issues is not real. That's what occurred in the other states, and what the ultimate, again, the ultimate goal of the groups that are challenging us is the elimination of food animal protein in our diets.
You mean quit eating meat?
That's correct.
And eggs.
Now, will that occur? You know, we have, you know, vastly overwhelmingly demand for food animal protein. But the problem is, as we go through these processes, the impacts that they put on our industry and the consumer from a financial standpoint, they're okay with that. If they can put our producers out of business by making it financially unable to make a living on the farm, or if they can raise the cost of food animal protein at the retail level for a certain segment of our society cannot purchase it, they're satisfied with that. And that's what's been occurring in these other states with the elimination of some of these practices.
Can you give me an example in other states where how that's occurred, how that's happened?
Yeah, good examples in California currently with the elimination of some of these practices. And again, I want to point out we shouldn't really be talking about these production practices, because issue two is not about specific production practices. It's about a process to define what is appropriate
right.
or not appropriate. But when you look at what occurred in California with the elimination of some specific production practices in the poultry industry, it's estimated today that the cost of eggs will go up minimally 25%. I've seen estimates as high as 40 or 45%. You know, they're in the process now of trying to define what is an appropriate production system. We've had organizations out there, companies, put designs on the table to build new facilities to abide by what was implemented or what was voted in last year in November. Now they're being challenged whether those will fit the bill. Well, you know, so what will occur out there now, that's going to probably end up in the court system. And that's obviously not where we want to be, trying to define what is appropriate production practices in our court system.
Okay, Joe Logan.
Yeah, and you know, Mike indicated that that there has been this spate of issues in which organizations have passed initiatives that have been intended to outlaw the consumption of meat or take meat off people's plates
right.
or convert people to vegetarians. In no cases, in zero of the states that have considered this issue, have any of those vegetarian agendas existed or been on the plate. It's only been with regard to those three narrow practices that they call extreme confinement practices.
And let's talk – that's the chickens, the hogs, and the calves, right?
Correct.
Okay. Explain those. And, you know, Michael, surely, you know, jump in on this. I think people those seem to be the big three. Explain what they are.
Well, you know, as Mike and I were actually discussing before the, you know, our session began here, we think that the only reason that outside organizations such as the Humane Society have been successful at all is because they have kind of cherry-picked three issues that the consumers already agree with. They
right.
have decided that in the specific issues such as a gestation crate, where a pregnant sow is kept in a narrow cage that is just larger than her body for virtually their entire pregnancy, that's not a reasonably humane way to raise an animal. That a larger, even if they need to keep that animal segregated to know what she's eating and drinking, there are ways to do that by still allowing enough room for the animal to move in a reasonably in a reasonable manner. The same principle applies to the other things. So I think that the only reason they've been successful is because they've cherry-picked those three extreme confinement practices.
Michael, do you think that's fair to cherry-pick like that, or is that the way the process maybe should work?
Well, I don't think it's fair to cherry-pick like that, but I would disagree with Joe. When you look at the issues, what people have reacted to in our other states where this has occurred are pictures, 15-second sound bites. And when you say what's wrong with an animal's being able to, you know, stand up, turn around, extend its limbs without touching anything, you know, most people would say that should happen. But what they don't understand is the science behind some of those production practices. And I'm not here to debate whether we should be doing these production practices
right.
or not. There is science that would validate the use of these production practices. Now, what has come into play in recent years, what is the social aspect of that? You know, what is the ethical aspect
Food,
of these
Inc.,
things?
You know, other
those
documentaries.
Types of things. But, you know, what also has occurred in our natural selection of animals over time, we select animals that thrive in these kind of conditions. You know, so if you take an animal out of this poultry out of this cage and put them into an open environment, they can't survive because genetics over time, selection over time, they've been able to adapt to that environment. So, you know, what is humane? What is not humane? I mean, that becomes almost a personal, evaluation. But science is not black and white in these areas. We have science. They have science that show, you know, pluses and minuses.
Right.
But what also occurs, and people need to understand, that when you make these decisions, there's ramifications across the board, not only at the producer end, but also at the retail end as far as the cost of food. You know, when you ask somebody, you know, what is allowing this animal to stand up, turn around, is that worth 50 cents more for a dozen eggs? Is that worth $2 more? Is that, you know, where is the equilibrium in that? Also, these practices have come about from almost a health standpoint. We can provide an environmentally controlled situation for these animals to have a healthier animal living in these situations than in most cases we can provide out in, you know, free range or open environments. Employee safety, you know, all these things need to come into consideration.
So all of these technological changes over the last 25, 30 years, there's a reason for every single one of them.
Correct.
They're not random. There's a reason. And if we eliminate them, if we begin eliminating them, whether it's with cherry picking or however it's done legislatively, there's long-term ramifications that we can't necessarily see easily.
The last point I'd make in this is a continuum. We're never going to get there. We're going to be better producers tomorrow, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. We'll continue to improve. We'll continue to learn from what we do and improve our operations.
There's so many more questions, and there's lots of callers, and we have to take a break right now. But I did want to say to the callers, if you're wondering why you're waiting, it's because I'm waiting for somebody to call who's in support of Issue 2. I'll take another opposition to Issue 2 call after the break. Give us a call if you support Issue 2, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Hate to take a break, but we have to. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Whenever it's on, the sound is so compelling that I can't not listen to it. I mean, you can close your eyes, you know, but you can't close your ears. And I feel connections with people that I'll never meet, that I'll never see, that are halfway around the world in different countries. My name is Rob Ellis, and WOSU is my source for stepping through the looking glass into new worlds, ideas, and possibilities.
Good morning. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Amy Jarovich. 46 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:39. In just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides will be here. We'll hear about the history of the world's most devastating viruses and humankind's battle with infectious disease. That discussion begins at 11 o'clock, right here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820.
Support for WOSU comes from Thurber House, presenting evenings with author's guest Rita Mae Brown, reading from Animal Magnetism, My Life with Creatures Great and Small, October 28th at the Columbus Performing Arts Center. Tickets at thurberhouse.org.
Taking a look at the weather forecast, some sunshine this morning, a few clouds this afternoon, and a high of 65. Rain showers tonight and a low of 48. Cloudy with morning rain on Wednesday and a high of 60 degrees. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you'd like to join the conversation about Issue 2, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm looking for folks who support Issue 2. I know a lot of you out there oppose it on the lines right now, and I want to hear from all of you, but I'd like to keep some balance, too. Issue 2, if approved by Ohio voters, would establish the Livestock Care Standards Board. We've been talking about how it's going to the ballot, and it would be a constitutional amendment because that's the only way to stop outside interests from coming into Ohio and manipulating the legislative system to cherry-pick restrictions, bans on things, all different kinds of tactics that have been taken in other states. Has to mostly do with how we care for our farm animals. Michael, what do you mean by out-of-state groups when you're talking about those? Who are all these people? Because, you know, obviously Joe Logan isn't from the out-of-state, so.
Yes, the organization has led to drive in most of these state initiatives has been HSUS, Humane Society of the United States.
And that is not made up of local groups.
That is not your local Humane Society. So your local Humane Societies do tremendous work out here as far as working with, you know, abandoned animals, welfare issues within our counties and our state.
The Humane Society of the United States, then, is more interested in agricultural use of animals or that in addition to all those other issues as well?
Well, you know, I need to be probably a little careful in how, you know, my view of what HSUS is all about.
Okay.
Because they have many fronts. It's not just strictly farm animals. It's all animals.
Okay. If there's a constitutionally created board that makes these decisions about how we care for our farm animals, would people, Ohioans, still be able to get legislation passed outside of the board that would address animal care issues?
Yes.
How would that work?
Well, they'll either need to be able to bring another constitutional amendment that would either, you know, overturn the current one, reconfigure the board or displace the board, or have specific practices adopted within the Constitution.
Okay. And Joe, are you comforted by that at all?
Well, in a backhanded fashion, although I don't think that it is appropriate addressing this wider issue to do it through a constitution. That said, I think it's important for your listeners to understand that when these initiatives were brought to the legislature, both in the House and when they passed the Senate, they both included language that would supersede any other authority by another constitutional amendment or the legislative initiative. So they were designed to be not only an end run around outside organizations like HSUS, but in effect would have been an end run around our whole constitutional process. That's why those things were kicked out in the legislative process.
Okay, we're going to take a call now from Gene Bauer. He's the president of Farm Sanctuary. Gene, you're on the air. Could you describe what Farm Sanctuary is and where you're from?
Yes, Farm Sanctuary is a nonprofit organization. We're national in scope, but we have farms in New York and California, and we are opposed to Issue 2. We think it is a power grab by agribusiness who does not want voters to look at the way animals are being mistreated on these factory farms. The Humane Society approached agribusiness in Ohio, as they've done in other states, to talk about these issues and to try to come up with a reasonable compromise to prevent some of the cruelest practices. And in Michigan, you know, they sat down at the table and came to an agreement and agreed to phase out the inhumane confinement of animals where they can't even turn around or stretch their limbs. In Ohio, unfortunately, agribusiness is digging in, and the intent there, you know, as Michael said, is to allow any practices and to allow all practices that currently exist to continue. So this is really an attempt to maintain the status quo, despite the fact that most consumers oppose it and that these animals suffer terribly in these small confinement systems.
That's the point, the status quo. Michael, how it does seem like that if you're establishing this and if you say everything's working like it should now or it's on a continuum toward improvement, why would the board need to be established otherwise?
Well, first off, I did not say that we're going to maintain status quo.
Okay.
Okay. The board will determine what is appropriate or not appropriate. This is defining a process to deal not only with these three production issues that we seem to keep coming back to, but ongoing issues. When we get down to a lot of the concerns that we have on an ongoing basis, as an industry, we're trying to be proactive. We're trying to get out in front of not only this issue, but whatever the issue of tomorrow is going to be. Because when you look at historically what HSUS does, they would like to pick you off state by state, issue by issue, and come back multiple times. So this is not just strictly about three production issues. This is defining an ongoing process to address this and be proactive within our industry. The other thing, as far as the negotiation that, you know, Gene made reference to, I don't consider it negotiation when somebody comes in and says, this is what we want you to do, and if you aren't prepared to do this voluntarily, we're going to bring a ballot initiative to have these practices removed. That doesn't sound like a negotiation to me. And what occurred in Michigan, I can tell you I've had conversations with producers in Michigan, and that was not a very nice negotiation. And the industry, and I'm talking across all of agriculture, is very divided in what has occurred in Michigan.
Now, and that has just – I think the governor just signed that into law this
Correct.
Week maybe, yesterday or the day before. A couple weeks ago. A couple weeks ago. Okay. Thank you, Gene, for calling. We appreciate your call.
Absolutely.
Joe, Logan?
Yes, to that issue, Mike has suggested that, once again, the agenda of outside organizations, HSUS or whatever,
is to make us all vegetarians.
Well,
that's what.
And once again, to reiterate, in every case, in no case have they ever gone to any other initiative other than those three extreme confinement practices. And I want to return to the idea of negotiation. In the state of Colorado, they deemed that the poultry industry, the egg-laying industry, was too important to the economy of Colorado to be considered or to be hindered by this. So they exempted that. Now, that occurred in a negotiated process, and I believe HSUS was at the table during those processes. I would have hoped that such an agreement could have taken place, or such rational give and take could have taken place in Ohio. Now, on a constitutional basis, that opportunity is out the window.
Now, if issue two passes, won't Humane Society of the United States come back and put something else on the ballot? Hasn't that been?
Yeah, frankly, because the exclusivity language in the issues that passed the legislature were eliminated for constitutional reasons. Now, really, the door is open. And frankly, I've heard the Humane Society say on the record that now they will be forced to come back and put in a constitutional issue of their own. And that may have a process that even the agribusiness folks don't like.
And if I could ask a question along the same line,
sure.
Why wouldn't HSUS come back in and try to address the board? There will be an open forum for people to have opposing views as far as what's appropriate or not appropriate. If we put this process in place, why wouldn't they work through the process and allow this board to make the decisions based on all input from all sides and work within that framework? What we're trying to do is design a framework to have an ongoing business atmosphere and not have the threat of, you know, every other year having a ballot initiative to come in to do something against the agriculture community to put hardships on our producers and continue to force the cost of food higher for our consumers in the state.
Just one second. Thanks for all the callers. I do want to get to you, Joe Logan.
Yeah, and once again, because this is a constitutional issue, I think it guarantees that we're on this kind of race to the bottom in terms of constitutional integrity and a constant onslaught of initiatives to affect livestock.
So, well, it's a good question, though. Why can't groups that want to, in whatever fashion, protect the welfare of farm animals work through a board like this? Wouldn't that work?
Yeah. First of all, it may. Now, the board has not been appointed. There are even no rules to the board at this point. The board does not even have to meet. It just has to exist. So, we'll find out as time goes on and as the legislator writes the rules and as the ag department writes the code, we'll find out how this will work. I expect that if there is an opportunity for the public to contribute to this process, that Humane Society and other organizations will indeed come and express their
Either with bells on. Michael Bumgarner, one question before I take a couple calls, because we've got some pros and cons out there. How would this be paid for? Everything costs money, so I did not look at the fiscal note for it, if there is such a thing out there for it.
I think the estimates that, and Joe made reference to it the other day, I think $180,000.
$170,000.
And that's an estimate. That's pure guess at this point. Okay. I don't know what it'll cost.
Okay.
As far as the ongoing cost of the board will be determined in implementation legislation as far as how the board is implemented. But understand, though, if we go to the alternatives, the cost is going to be felt by every consumer out here because of the higher food cost.
Okay. Let's see. Nancy, you oppose issue two.
Yes,
Tell
I do.
Tell us why.
First off, to Michael, he talks about some of these pictures playing off of people's emotions, I'd like to ask, what about the advertisements that are being used on television? I think the agribusiness is hiding on the backs of the small traditional farmer. I grew up on a farm. I know what goes on in the traditional farms. But I also know, being from Marion County, some of these big egg farms that are creating problems. I think that it is the industrial farms who money is more important than anything else. They're playing off of the small farmers, and they are the ones that are pushing this. And my question to Joe is, what percentage of farms in Ohio do these three major problems occur? Is it mostly the agricultural farms, or is it all of the farms?
Okay. Thank you very much, Nancy.
Yeah, well, with regard to these three, what they refer to as extreme confinement practices, I think that they occur actually on a relatively modest number of farms. According to the ag statistics, I think there were 450-some farms that have more than 20 sows in Ohio. So that's a relatively small number. And likewise, with regard to poultry, I think there are only 400-and-some farms in Ohio that have over 100 chickens.
So you're saying that really this would affect relatively few farmers, but Michael, you're sitting here shaking your head. I mean, it's a seminal part of the problem.
The use of gestation stalls is a very common practice amongst all sizes of producers in the state. You know, now if you're talking about a producer that has 10 sows, right, we're talking about such a small percent of the animals that are being produced in this state. No, they probably don't use gestation
stalls. So animal for animal, it would affect many animals.
Many.
But farmer for farmer, the number changes a little bit that way.
Yeah,
but
I would
but
disagree.
You're still saying it's still kind
of high.
Poultry
probably, you know, Joe may be accurate on the poultry, but on the swine side, absolutely not.
Yeah, those are national agricultural statistics.
Okay. Patty, I'm going to call on you next. Patty, thanks for waiting.
Hi.
You're for issue two.
Well, I think so. I'm just learning back and forth and just from what I'm reading.
Okay.
But I have a question for if they do establish the agricultural board and the decisions for the appropriate care. I was wondering if that has any supervision or regulation over the new movement that to me is fairly unregulated, and that is raising of backyard chickens in suburb areas, which are being passed by city council who have very little experience with how well to care for backyard chickens. And I wondered if this board or anything else, there's a lot of them ending up in the, as the caller earlier mentioned, he was from a farm sanctuary. From what is online, a lot of people who are trying to raise backyard chickens with 4 to 6 are ending up in farm sanctuaries from poor care. So is this issue at all related to being able to set appropriate standards for the backyard chickens? Because they seem to be self-regulating, and they're not very well in some areas.
All right. Patty, thanks for calling. So how small would this go? Is there any restrictions, or is that in the enabling?
No, there would be no restrictions. You know, any food-producing animal would have to abide by the guidelines established by
the board.
Even
if it's for private use?
Correct.
Okay.
Sure.
All righty. Let's see. Jerome sent us an email. He says, I say let the system work as it is designed. If the legislature won't act, so be it. The system will correct itself eventually when the voters choose representatives. So I guess Jerome's saying let the legislature handle it, and if it won't, so be it. But what's to stop, say, the Humane Society of the United States? Of course, they've already said they'll come back and put something on the ballot. But what would have stopped them from putting something on the ballot to amend the Constitution as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, that would have been a possibility, and they have done so in other states, once again, where they could not come to a meeting of the minds with the agribusiness forces. But they have shown a willingness to sit down and discuss and negotiate and work out a legislative process. Like I said, in Colorado, it led to a very substantial accommodation to the poultry industry, and it's too bad we missed that opportunity in Ohio.
In Ohio, as the puppy mill industry, as it's often referred to, is that part of this matrix of animal rights issues? Is that, would that be affected? Are those considered agricultural animals?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so legislation could be enacted, or something be put on the ballot for that matter, that would affect, you know, how we have, yeah. you know, yeah, the puppy industry.
That's a separate issue.
That's a separate issue. Okay.
You can make an argument that it might be, you know, in some cases, commercial activity. And
exactly.
That it should be regarded as livestock. And perhaps if this board is created, it would be wise for them to consider that issue as well.
In a column for the Columbus Dispatch, John Fisher, he's the executive vice president, no relation, by the way, executive vice president of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. He said that the 13-member panel would be charged with bringing diverse viewpoints to reach a consensus on the issues of animal health and well-being. Is that diversity, is that mentioned in the constitutional amendment? And how is diversity defined? How do we know that it would be diverse?
Well, I think that what you're referring to there is the general guidelines of who makes up that 13-member board. You know, as far as the cross-section between veterinarians, animal behaviorists, consumers, local humane society representation, farmers, and so on, that's the diversity that I think we're talking about there.
Okay. It's more titles. It's not necessarily personal philosophy.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be screened for that.
Once again, circling back to the what is a family farm issue, there is a lot of kind of suspicion about whether this will indeed reflect the diverse views that represent Ohioans.
Yeah, sure, Michael.
Just a comment in our caller we had here a moment ago as far as why couldn't we let things continue to work as they are. You know, I think one thing that people need to understand and should ask themselves, as an industry, agriculture has been opposed to any type of government oversight or intervention into their operations forever. This is probably the first time you on record that you would have a farm organization asking for some government intervention into their operations. This is because of where we are at this point in time in society. We need to assure our consumers that we are doing things appropriate. We have all the confidence in the world that we are. We've done that forever. But where we are at today, we need to have the reassurance back to our consumers to make sure they understand that we are abiding by appropriate guidelines within our operations to make sure we continue to provide them a safe, adequate food supply.
We only have about 30 seconds, but Joe, I'll give you the last word. And sorry I can't take the calls today, folks. We're running out of time.
Yeah, as Michael had said, obviously agriculture has changed a tremendous amount. It used to be that we, as we drove around the countryside, could actually see the animals out in the pastures, and that's very seldom the case anymore. They're in these big white barns back behind, away from the road a bit, and it's made consumers wonder exactly what these practices are. As I think we learn more and more about that, I think we understand that in some cases those practices are designed to maximize profit as well as the other initiatives.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's it. That's all we have time for on All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for listening.